What's up? Preseason podcast of the year is back on a Saturday night once again, y'all. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for allowing us to grace you with our presence. I think that sounds right. Preseason podcast of the year, man. Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Report. Thank you for joining us today. It's Saturday, October the 17th. We are in the midst of college football as we speak. Myself and my two guests that are joining me this evening just watched the Michigan-Michigan State game end to our disbelief, but we'll touch on that momentarily. As usual, I want to thank you guys and shout out the podcast again, the website, Hip Hop Sports Report. Please, if you like the podcast, if you like what you're hearing, go check us out on iTunes and subscribe and comment and rate the podcast there. We're also on Stitcher Radio, so check out the podcast there. And, of course, the website. We're always putting up articles. Latest thing right now we're working on is the NBA preview. NBA starts in about 10 days. So we're going to have a lot to say on that. Shout out to Kenneth Hicks and Anthony Houston for helping us out with the NBA preview. So we already got some of our Eastern Conference lottery teams. That's the first article that we did this time around. So check that out on the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. And then, of course, we're on Twitter, twitter.com, and facebook.com/HHSReport. Please be sure to check us out there. I wanted to start off with a little bit of a different note this evening. A very good friend of mine, I just got word yesterday, passed away, and I was really hurt by that. His name is Tony Houston, in no relation or connection to Anthony Houston, who works for Hip Hop Sports Report. But this gentleman, actually, Tony Houston, was my barber back in Cleveland, Ohio, for the better part of the last 20 years. He was family. He became family. He was family to me, and he knew my entire immediate family. He knew my mother. He knew my uncle. He used to look out. My uncle got a little bit older, Uncle Fred. He's looked out for my Uncle Fred because him and his uncle, my uncle and Tony's uncle went back some years, and so he's looked out for my uncle as he's gotten older a little bit. But like I said, Tony cut my hair, but he was more than just a barber, man. He gave me advice, you know what I'm saying? He's one of the old heads in the community that gave a lot of the young kids knowledge and was dropping jewels on us, you know, from the barber chair. And that's just what he did, man. And he was a great dude. He was a businessman. He didn't just cut hair there. He owned the shop. And, you know, he ran the streets and did stuff like that. But, you know, he had a legitimate business and he had a strong core of clientele that used to come in the Legends Barbershop on Monticello Boulevard, east side of Cleveland. And like I said, man, he cut my hair for about 17, 18 years, man. And when I got the word yesterday that he had passed, I was hurt. I was devastated, actually. He came to my wedding, you know what I'm saying? And the two guys that are joining me on the podcast this evening were in attendance and got the chance to see him and meet him. He actually cut one of their hair, one of their heads in preparation for the wedding. So, you know, shout out to Tone, Pops, you know, we love you, man. And shout out to everybody over at Legends on Monticello in South Euclid, Ohio. I'm just hurt by that, man. But we're dedicating this podcast to you, Tone, and the entire Legends family. Didn't want to be too somber, but I had to make sure that I said that because I love Tone and what he meant to me and the family and the community. But I do want to bring in our guest this evening. One of them is a frequent guest of the podcast. You know him already, Vince Hicks. It's always entertaining when Vince is on the podcast. So thank you, Vince, for joining us again. And by the way, Vince is joining us in person because he came from Cleveland, Ohio to where I'm located in Illinois right now in preparation for my baby shower. I don't know if I ever talked about it on the podcast, but I am having my first child. I have sired a child, ladies and gentlemen, if you can believe that. I've sired a child. He is coming in December. And so Vince came down with his family for the baby shower. Thank you for doing that, cousin. I love you for that. And the other gentleman who's coming, this is the same guy that drove from St. Louis to Cleveland and to come to my bachelor party last year because he's that type of cat. And he's a very good friend of the entire Hicks family. And he was supposed to be on a podcast earlier this year, but technical difficulties robbed us of that podcast. It's the Lost Podcast. That was done at Terry Palmer's house. But Terry is in the building as well. Thank you for joining us, Terry. Gentlemen, I don't have anything planned. I don't have anything planned. All I wanted to do was get y'all together in a room and just open it up and just see what happens. Because you are two of the most intelligent and opinionated sports fans that I know. and hip-hop fans that I know. And so I know that we're going to have a lot to say and a lot to talk about. And I didn't have anything particular that I wanted to get off my chest, aside from the fact that, and I'm going back a few weeks now, but a few weeks ago, Floyd Mayweather defeated Andre Berto to move his record to 49-0, as you guys all saw. He allegedly announced his retirement. I don't believe that that's the case. I think he'll be back. We have not seen the last of Floyd. Vince feels differently, but we'll get into that momentarily. Each of you, I think, has a certain opinion on where Floyd ranks all time. But the only reason I want to bring this up is because each of you came to me individually and said, you know, that would make a good podcast, you know, to talk about Floyd and his place in history. So, I mean, like I said, we can open it up, y'all. I don't know where I want to start with that. Did anybody have any thoughts on that? Terry, go ahead and take the floor, man.
Let's do that. V, I don't know where you at with it, but just off the strength of me being a historian of sorts when it comes to sports, especially boxing, Jack Johnson, you know what I'm saying, Floyd Lewis, whatever, I honestly agree with Floyd in that he is the best to ever do it. I don't think
you think he's the best ever.
I think he's the best ever. I honestly think he's the best ever.
You know, they've been boxing before a long time. They've been boxing for like over 150 years or whatever. Like, yeah. You think he's the best to ever put on a pair of gloves?
I think he's the
or
best
bare knuckle it up or anything?
I just think that nobody has ever dominated the sport for so long with such precision without taking. I mean, nobody has even come close to matching his skill level. Like, he's so good and so far advanced beyond his opposition that his fights are disappointing to watch. Like, that is a level of excellence that nobody has ever attained at a professional level where the opponent can't even make the fight entertaining. You could say he runs and he does this. Nobody's been that skillful where they can make the other person in the ring move. Like, they nullify the opponent. Like, nobody ever says both of y'all made the fight boring. They blame him. Like, he's the only person in the ring that's making it like that.
You know what the problem is, though, is that people like action fights, and they like action fighters. So when you say a statement like he's the greatest of all time, I'm not saying that that's best wrong ever. Necessarily, or best ever. But what I'm saying is that people are going to take that, and they're going to just assume that, you know, Floyd fought all these bums and he ran and whatever, and he didn't have the memorable fights that people like to hang their hat on when they're talking about somebody as the greatest of all time. So that's the flaw in that argument through the eyes of, I think, the majority of the general public. Does that make sense?
I mean, it makes sense, right? So let's take some of these pinnacle fights, right? So let's take one of my favorites, the Rope-A-Dope, right? So the Thriller Manila, right? So
no, that's Rumble in the Jungle.
Rumble in the Jungle, you got Foreman.
Right.
He had a technique. Like, literally, Ali had to develop a technique. He knew that fighting their fight would not work out well for him. He saw Foreman destroy the man who just beat him.
Joe Frazier.
And
he beat him up.
He beat him up. I mean, he destroyed him.
Punched him up off his feet and punched him into the ground.
He said, there's no way I can go punch for punch with this guy.
Right.
So I'm going to wear him out. He doesn't have endurance. He's going to try to kill me. I'm going to whisper in his ear sweet nothings to aggravate him.
He did.
And then when he's tired and his energy's gone, depleted, I'm going to knock him out. And that was his plan from the jump.
Right.
That is a level of skill that was employed for that opponent. Nobody said that was a boring fight. He wasn't fighting back. George was doing whatever George was going to do.
It ended in a knockout, though.
But what I'm saying
that's
is,
that's why people don't view it that way.
Mayweather knocks people out, too.
Mayweather ain't knocked nobody out in 6 years.
Okay, so there's 6 years. How many years before Ali retired did he knock somebody out?
He was getting knocked out.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is, you can't say, well, he don't knock people out. He has knockouts on his record.
Sure.
He's got knockouts on his record. And they weren't, I mean, he got 8-round knockouts, 3rd-round knockouts on his record. He's smart. He's a calculated artist, skilled at his craft, and says, you can't hit me. I can hit you. I'm not going to get beat up. I'm going to have a career of longevity. And when I'm done with it, he's like Jim Brown. I'm going to be able to walk away
on my own terms.
On my own terms. And I'm going to be able to speak. I'm going to be intelligible when I speak. I'm not going to be bruised up because I want to fight the way you fight. I can still win. He's so dominant. How many people can go in a ring with other professionals that are also boxing and say, I can make you not hit me? You can do what you want to do, but I'm not going to let you hit me? We're all professionals. You can't do that. You can't be a running back in football and say, I'm going to make this sport boring and I'm going to make all the defenders miss. You can't do that. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know anybody that knows Floyd Mayweather's career or his body of work better than you, Vince. Where do you weigh in? Where do you shake out on this?
I'm a big proponent. You know, I'm a Floyd supporter. I might not agree as far as the best ever, because me being a historian, I would always say Sugar Ray Robinson would be the best fighter to ever put on gloves. But that's neither here nor there. My thing about Floyd is I agree with a lot that Terry says. Like, to me, my biggest thing is Floyd will be one of the guys that's appreciated after his career is done, later on down the line. Because what people fail to realize what this man has done, even the sport, the money the sport made, the way he's done the business thing, but just in the ring, like he said, it's incredible. Like, people say Andre Berto's fight was a gimme. You know what I'm saying? Floyd won. And, you know, everybody on a swan song want to go out. It's like homecoming in college. You don't want to play the number one national ranked team.
No,
at
homecoming. You want to play a stiff.
You want to play a stiff so you can go out and look good. That's right. What it's supposed to be. So on the swan song, that's what you want to do. A guy that he can land punches on. You know what I'm saying? Nobody can hit him, because people want to talk about Berto so bad. Andre Berto landed 83 punches in the 12-round fight with Floyd. But Manny Pacquiao landed 81 punches in the 12-round fight with Floyd. And Juan Manuel Marquez, who will be in the Hall of Fame, landed 69 punches in the 12-round fight with Floyd. So they act like Berto did something that everybody else don't do. These great boxers, these Hall of Fame boxers, could not hit this man. You know what I'm saying? And I compare that to Pernell Whitaker. Pernell Whitaker was like that defensively. Like, nobody could hit him. But Floyd also has a better offensive game than Pernell Whitaker. And people don't want to realize that Floyd stopped knocking people out when he started hurting his hands. I went to a Floyd fight in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Van Andel Arena in maybe 2001. And I believe he was fighting, it was a Hispanic fighter, but
he broke his hand in the fight.
He broke his hand in the second round.
Or did he break the other one too? Or did
he broke his hand in the second round, but I was sitting next to his sparring partner and said he had broke his other hand in sparring. So he fought 10 rounds out of 12 rounds with two broke hands. You know what I'm saying? And if you could see his 24/7s or his whatever Showtime shows now, preparing to the fights, you know what I'm saying? He has all these treatments done on his hands. And even in the Berto fight, if you listen, like the ninth round, he tells his father, I hurt my hand. Because he was trying to knock Berto out. And he almost knocked him out on a couple of occasions. But people try, like, boxing is a skill. You have to be talented. It's to hit and not be hit is the game of boxing. You know what I'm saying? And I tell people all the time that want to argue boxing with me, the thing that makes great fights is deficiencies. Like, people's lapses make great fights. You know what I'm saying? You think Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward want to hit each other that much? Or do you think Arturo Gatti was like, I can't not get hit and hit him and it's going to be a boring fight? No, the fighters that get hit is because they can't avoid not getting hit. Right. You think Pacquiao wanted the Marquez fights to go like that? No, he wanted to
do what Floyd did.
He wanted to do what Floyd did. Everybody, and if you say that, you're lying. So why is this man getting chastised and he's getting killed because of that approach? You know what I'm saying? Because he wants to dominate his sport and do it in a way where nobody else
does. What annoys me is when they say, well, Floyd Mayweather, he picks his opponents and he picks fighters and all this stuff. And I'm just like, I still hear people to this day. I watch the guys on Party Interruption, and Mike Wilbon takes shots at Floyd Mayweather every day on PTI.
I'm going to shout out Skip Bayless. Because he said Floyd Mayweather would never fight. I mean, Manny Pacquiao would never fight no Andre Berto's. Is he serious?
Yeah.
Who is Brandon Rios?
Right.
Who is Chris Algieri?
Yeah.
Well, I would take Berto over. Well, yeah, you know what I'm
Brandon Rios, I think, was undefeated, but Chris Algieri.
No, Brandon Rios wasn't undefeated. Brandon Rios had just lost his fight to, what's the dude out of Colorado?
Mike Alvarado, yeah.
He had just lost that fight before. Pacquiao didn't choose to fight Alvarado, even though he'd beat Alvarado. He chose to fight Brandon Rios, and Brandon Rios said, all up to the fight, I'm not a punching bag. I'm not coming here to win. What he was a punching bag. He got hit with like 600 punches. And everybody knew it. That's why he didn't sell no pay-per-view, because everybody knew he was going to be a punching bag.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, shout out to Skip Bayless on the hate side.
But I just, it just bugs me when they say that they pick five, because they're like, well, Floyd Mayweather, he picks his opponents, you know, or they say that, you know, they try to use the Roy Jones defense. Like, oh, he didn't fight nobody. And I'm just like, hold on, wait a minute. Floyd Mayweather beat Juan Manuel Marquez. He beat Manny Pacquiao. He beat an undefeated Ricky Hatton. He beat Oscar De La Hoya. He beat Shane Mosley. This is a Hall of Fame fighters.
Listen.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
while we're talking about that, they need to be scrutinizing Pacquiao's record if they're going to talk about not fighting nobody. Because
he fought everybody after Floyd beat him.
After Floyd beat him. Listen to the names on his resume.
Except for Marco Antonio
Barrera and the Morales back in the day.
That's
when Pacquiao was at a smaller weight class. But this, since he won eight world titles in eight divisions. Listen to the fighters he beat. You know what I'm saying? And listen how they came off the fights. You know what I'm saying? Like, Mayweather had already beat
Hatton.
He had already beat Hatton. He had already beat De La Hoya. He had already beat Shane Mosley.
Right.
Shane Mosley had already beat Antonio Margarito.
Right.
Margarito had already beat Cotto.
Right.
All his big wins, their fighters are coming off losses. The only person in like the last 10 years that he's fought that wasn't coming off losses was Chris Algieri, that beat Ruslan Bravatnikov when he wasn't supposed to beat him, and the undefeated Timothy Bradley. But everybody knows Timothy Bradley punched like he got pillows in his hand. He's been like that the whole fight. He bite his lips and do all that. And the only person he's rocked in 10 years has been Bravatnikov. Yeah. So you want to scrutinize Floyd's record? Let's scrutinize everybody's record if you want to scrutinize
Floyd's record. You know who else is scrutinizing Floyd Mayweather? Is Triple G. Giovanni Golovkin, who fights tonight. Golovkin, is he undefeated?
Yes.
He's undefeated. Okay.
Undefeated. I think he's 33.
And 0, I think he's 33.
Like 31 knockouts.
He's a highlight machine on the knockout tip, Golovkin.
He's a knockout machine.
And whose opponent again tonight?
David Lemieux.
David Lemieux. Okay. Now,
another power puncher. I think David Lemieux is like 30-1 with 28 knockouts. He's a knockout.
Is this just a warm-up fight for Triple G until he faces a legitimate opponent?
It's a warm-up fight because, and it's not that David Lemieux is a scrub. It's the fact that David Lemieux is going to fight Triple G wants to do.
He's going to brawl with him.
He's going to stand right in front of him
and trade.
Bang out, and he's not going to win.
He's not going to win that battle.
He's not going to win that fight. No. But, like, my problem with Triple G, and I used to like Triple G.
Yeah, you told me about up to I think you told me about this.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I used to like Triple G up to a point. But Triple G jumped on the Money Mayweather bandwagon.
Everybody want to get paid. They all want to get paid. They want that payday.
Nobody wants to pay dues, but they want to get paid. Floyd Mayweather fights at 147. And Floyd Mayweather is not a blown up welterweight. Floyd Mayweather walks around at 150 pounds.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why he's eating steak when... Two nights before the fight, when the other fighter is eating...
Canelo had to starve himself, eating
grapes and got on garbage bags at the dinner table, trying to sweat.
And then at the fight, they win 156.
Exactly. So
Canelo about to die in the ring against Floyd.
Yeah, and you know what I'm saying? Like, Floyd Mayweather, he hasn't been showing his weight as of lately in the ring. But usually, he weighs in at 147, comes in the fight at 151 or something, like four rounds. And the guy he's fighting weighs in at 147, comes in the fight at 162 or something like that. They're a middleweight that he's fighting usually in the fight. But the thing that makes me mad about Triple G is he fights at 160 at the middleweight division. But he wants to call out Floyd, who fights at 147. Like I said, he's not a blown-up welterweight. He's a small guy. So he wants all the advantages. Because in the middleweight division, you got Peter Quillin, you got Miguel Cole, you even got 154 with Canelo Alvarez. You got all these fights to get me made in your division, but you want to call out Floyd, and then because
you know Floyd about to walk away,
and then
he wants that payday,
and then you got Andre Ward at 168,
undefeated.
Andre
you don't want none of that.
Exactly,
you don't
168.
Want
so
want
he, want, no, he no, wants want he wants Ward. Floyd to come up 13. You know what I'm saying? A 13-pound difference. Him at 164, at 147, fighting at a catch rate at 154, 155, whatever. So he can have the advantage, but he won't fight a guy who is Andre Ward at 168, and he's at 160. They can meet at 164. It's not a stretch for either of them.
No.
You know what I'm saying? To make that weight.
No.
But that's what I don't like about Triple G. That's why I stopped liking him, because everybody wants the money fight, man. Everybody wants a big payday, because That's what it is.
That's why you said
they don't want to lose.
One time showing one time, up at all the Floyd
fights.
He died for that fight.
Amir Khan.
King Khan thought he had that fight coming.
Everybody wants the payday.
I actually thought Amir Khan was going to get that fight until they gave it to Berto.
I knew Amir Khan wasn't going to get it because Amir Khan don't deserve it. Amir Khan getting knocked out by Danny Garcia and all that, he don't deserve a fight.
I blame the media.
Hold on. What do you blame the media for?
For this entitlement in athletes that they feel like they deserve a shot.
Why is it the media's fault? Because boxers are the most arrogant people.
No, it's the media's fault because the media perpetuates images of underdogs winning, whether it's in movies or these Friday Night Lights. Anybody where it's like all I need is a shot. You know, the Mr. T character in the Rocky movie where
Clubber Lang.
Yeah, they fill these people's heads up with. You dodging real talent. Come on, bum. Come on, Balboa. Come on, Balboa. You ain't want to fight about real. And they really think these is like tissue paper champions. And they not like, this dude is paid dues. This dude has been doing it for 20.
He's been fighting world champions for 18
years. Right. Like,
what makes you think that you could fight nobody in the top 10 and get like a top 12 fighter to fight? And win and think you deserve a title.
I said that years ago too in an interview, like in 2009.
I watched boxing for so long. I was born in 1976. The first fight I can remember watching all the way through was Alexis Arguello and Aaron Pryor. That was probably I think it was the first fight. That was 1982 when Pryor knocked Arguello in the 14th round. My uncle was a big Pryor supporter, so we had to fight at my father's.
On my side?
No, my uncle Tommy on my other side.
Okay,
so he ran in Cincinnati and he actually. Kicked it with Sweet Pea. He from Virginia Beach.
Okay.
He kicked it with Pernell. But he was a big dude in Cincinnati that ran with Aaron Pryor.
Gotcha. And his
cat. So he was a big Pryor fan. You know what I'm saying? And for some reason, I wanted Alexis Arguello to win. I don't know why. At a six-year-old age or whatever. But that's the first real fight that I actually watched all the way through. Not a highlight. Not whatever.
Right.
So I'm very well-versed on boxing. So all this stuff that they try to talk. You know what I'm saying? I remember when fighters used to fight each other. You know what I'm saying? I remember you used to have to. I remember when you used to have to fight to get in the top 10. Then you would have to fight at least three or four guys in the top 10 before you got a title shot.
But it's funny now they consider guys to be the number one contender. When you see these title fights, it'd be like a star versus some dude that you might not have ever heard of unless you really follow the sport closely. And they always say, well, he's the number one contender in this weight class. And I'd be thinking, like, how is that? Yeah. Unless each belt or each division has a different.
And that's what it is. That's what it is. It's no, it's no.
It's an inexact science.
It's no uniformity in boxing.
Right.
You got all these alphabet belts. They put whoever they want there in that position.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You got the WBO, the WBC, the IBF, the IBC, all these different belts. And if you look at the rankings, it's somebody different in the top one or two. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you know what I'm saying? And then that's what they do. And people say, and that's when you get fighters that say, oh, he was scared to fight me. So he gave up his belt, not because he was scared to fight me. But if it's you got four belts, if you got all the welterweight titles and four different people want you to fight four different guys as their number one contender, you won't have to forfeit three of them to fight one of the contenders.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? So usually, if you look at Floyd, the guy he usually fights is the number one pound for pound in that division. You know what I'm saying? Because you can have Manny Pacquiao number one here, Timothy Bradley number one here, Amir Khan number one here, or, you know what I'm saying, Keith Thurman number one here. You can only fight one of them. So the other sanction is going to be like, oh, you didn't fight our champion, so.
And then
that's what Keith Thurman can say, oh, he was scared to fight.
Right.
I was the number one contender for the IBF belt, and he didn't fight.
Of course he's going to say that because he wants that payday.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this. Now, Terry, we already got your thoughts on this. Vince, Floyd Mayweather, his Hall of Fame credentials are unquestioned, but as far as where his rank is pound for pound all time, Terry and I, you know, we've had discussions about this, about Floyd being ranked ahead of Ali strictly because, well, he has the resume that supports it, even though people might not want to believe it, because people like Muhammad Ali more, and Muhammad Ali stood for social change at a time where it was not popular to do so.
Exactly.
And he was in the crosshairs of white America. There was the white establishment.
Which also got him street cred in sports. So it even increased his popularity much more.
Right. And so now people, when they associate Muhammad Ali with the greatest, it's synonymous. Those two words, phrases together, you just put them together, Muhammad Ali is the greatest.
No matter how many times he got whooped, he's still the greatest.
Well, I think he lost five fights.
I'm not talking about loss.
I think he lost five fights, I'm saying. And I mean, he definitely, you know, he took a whooping in the third Frazier fight.
He took a whooping against Norton.
He won that fight, but he took a whooping. He took a whooping against Ken Norton. You know what I'm saying?
Both of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, and they split the two.
He took a whooping against the white cat that whooped him. And he won that fight, but he whooped him.
I don't even remember that. I don't remember that offhand.
Irish dude. I can't think, but anyway.
Drawing a blank. But in any case, Vince, where do you shake out on pound for pound, the best of all time, or best ever, or at least where do you think Floyd stacks up against Ali? I mean, because when Floyd laid out his case, he made a lot of good points. I mean, he's like, look, man, I done moved up like 6-7 weight classes. I've never taken a loss. I don't get beat up in my fights like Ali did. And you know, he makes some good points.
Yeah, he does make some valid points. Like, to me, it's hard because it's like apples and oranges. Because that big thing about moving up in weight class is a lot. You know what I'm saying? Because Ali can only fight the best heavyweight. Because he's a heavyweight. It's no going down. You know what I'm saying? It's not really that era. You know what I'm saying? Like the era where
Roy Jones.
Back in the day, like Jack Johnson fought the middleweight champion of the world. You know what I'm saying? Like, he fought was all this
back then.
It was just, you know what I'm saying? Because
it was only 17
bucks. It was family catcher or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And, you know what I'm saying? Like, guys like that could, you know what I'm saying? The middleweight can challenge for the heavyweight title and this, that. So, Floyd has an argument because he's fought at 115, 120, 125. You know what I'm saying? And Ali, you can only measure him against the heavyweight. You know what I'm saying? And Floyd, another thing, like, my thing is, I love Ali. I think Ali's one of the greatest of all time. How he revolutionized the sport of boxing and what he did. A big man as a heavyweight with that
like
kind
a
of
move,
speed.
Right, and the hand speed. Right.
He just changed the game around. And he beat a guy that everybody was afraid of in Sonny Liston.
Right.
But, you know what I'm saying? Like, twice. But Ali did lose in his prime. Even though it was coming off a layoff after he beat Jerry Cord.
It was a long layoff.
Yeah, but he lost in his prime. But he did fight Jerry Cord before he fought Joe Frazier. That's a prime loss, you know what I'm saying? Like,
he had a tune-up fight.
Yeah, this is a tune-up fight before that. But, I mean, it is a prime, it's a loss in the prime.
I mean, and Joe Frazier put him down with that left hook.
And Joe Frazier,
I mean, that was,
and
you
Joe
know,
Frazier won the fight.
Yeah,
you know
he rocked
round
him.
Round by round,
and he put him on his
fight.
Back.
You know
he put Ali
like,
on his back. That
he
happened.
He won the fight. And, you know what I'm saying, he proved that it wasn't a joke or a fluke. In the other fights that Ali won, they were still close fights. Like, he was able to lay punches on Ali or whatever. So, like, I don't like I said, the reason why I picked Sugar Ray Robinson as the greatest of all time is just because me looking at what he did. I mean, he was he won like 80 something fights in a row, and then he won. He was like 124-1 in his first 125 fights with like, you know what I'm saying, 80 knockouts. Like,
right, and he
ridiculous.
Finished like 180.
Yeah, and he finished like 100.
Didn't Ray rather put him as number two though?
I think
put him right up behind him.
Yeah, I know he had Roberto Duran and a couple other guys on his list.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, me being a historian, it's that's kind of hard for me.
It's hard
you
to compare errors.
It's kind of hard for me to compare errors, number one. It's kind of hard for me to compare weight classes, like I said, because, you know what I'm saying, like, if you start off fighting at 120, you end up at 160, you probably got like 9 world titles in these different weight classes, you know what I'm saying? And you fought a different... You know what I'm saying? Different kinds of fighters, different, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it's kind of hard, but to me, like, people don't want to put Floyd as one of the greatest of all time. And Floyd Mayweather will go down in history when looked back as one of the greatest. Because everybody likes to say, oh, he didn't fight, you know what I'm saying, at this time and this, but he fought the best fighter in his era. What do you want him to do?
Who didn't he fight?
You want him to go back to the era to fight Tommy Hearns and Marvin Hagler and everybody? It's easy, but it's like, Aaron right. Pryor had a thing out that said, I would have knocked Floyd Mayweather out in 6. Sound good? You know what I'm saying? That's like somebody right now saying, oh, I could have tackled Jim Brown. He would have never been great. You know what I'm saying? Sound good because you could never do it. You know what I'm saying? You can never do it. So for you to slight him, but if you look at his context of the situation he is now, he's fought everybody he could fight. And that's why I think he's retired. And I want him to stay retired. And I think he may stay retired is because it's always going to be somebody else. It's always somebody else. His pinnacle was to fight Manny Pacquiao.
And he did it.
And he did it. And he won. Easily. He won easily. Now it was Pacquiao was hurt. And he didn't rematch. But it's always somebody else. So it's Keith Thurman. He don't want to fight no young, hungry dude. And if he beat Keith Thurman, then it's the next guy.
He just beat a young, hungry guy named Canelo.
Exactly. It's a never-ending cycle right. that he can't win. So that's my thinking of him, like, realizing, like, I'm losing, you know what I'm saying, my love for the sport. And I can never satisfy these cats. You know what I'm saying? As much as he's been the outcast or the villain, you always want to, you know what I'm saying, make your contemporaries respect you. Right. You know what I'm saying? And once he figured out that he can't make them respect him because they feel a certain way about him, I think that's his mentality.
That's what it is. Like, personally, they don't like him. Exactly. Right. But like you all said, I mean, we ran down the list. Cotto, De La Hoya, you know, Hatton, Pacquiao.
We forgot about Zach Judah. We forgot about Chop Chop Gordon. We forgot about Diego Corrales. We forgot. Right. He's dominated, man.
He doesn't just win. He's done. He dominates.
Diego Chico Corrales was knocking everybody out. Was undefeated. Couldn't beat. Nobody could beat him. Nothing could happen to him. Floyd knocked him down like 5 times.
I've only seen him bleed twice.
I only saw him bleed against Cotto, and that was because he wanted to. Like, he was trying to mix it up with Cotto.
Exactly. Like,
I saw him bleed another one. But yeah, I only seen him bleed twice.
But that's the only way you can hit Floyd if he lets you.
Yeah, he wants to go to the people they want to see.
Let you throw punches and fires back.
And he don't throw combinations like he used to. He used to throw combinations like crazy.
To the hands thing. I never even thought about that. Because he did, he used to get his hands.
His hands are bad.
Yep. I wanna move on, y'all. Right. Great discussion about that, but I want to talk a little football because, like I said, we just saw a crazy finish of college football, and we walked into the podcast studio / office / nursery, soon to be nursery. We discussed all these things, we were discussing NFL conversation going. We talked about whether or not Le'Veon Bell is overrated. I said on Twitter this week, I think Le'Veon Bell is kind of overrated. And Terry, you kind of took me to task on that. I don't know if y'all want to talk about that or the college game. Ohio State's playing Penn State as we speak, as is LSU playing Florida. I don't know if y'all want to talk about something sparking interest.
I think we can start with my man Vince's lack of respect for Mr. Number 7 at LSU.
Leonard Fournette? Okay, so let me clean this up. Okay, Vince is not... He's not disrespecting Leonard Fournette.
I didn't say he disrespected
him. But you said lack of respect. That's kind of along the same line. Okay. He respects him. You know, I think I can speak with Vince and say that he believes that Leonard Fournette is a very, very talented young running back. But what I know about this guy, Vince, is that he likes to see a lot before...
Big body of work
before he... You know what I'm saying? Passes out that credit. Or, you know, he doesn't just hand out credit to the scrubs. Or Johnny come lately, you know what I'm saying? He hands out that credit to only people that have put in the work consistently and earned it. Fournette is only a sophomore. He had a solid year as a freshman. Not the greatest running back season of all time by freshmen, I don't think, you know. But he had a good season as a freshman. He's having a great season as a sophomore. But they don't play a lot of SEC defense down in the SEC. So, I mean, Vince, feel free to chime in, man.
That's just me. Number one, the flash in the pan, the overnight successes, you know what I'm saying? I'm not big on that, you know what I'm saying? That's why, you know what I'm saying, you get guys that...
I'm taking a step further and say that I think Vince hates everybody. No, Vince and his brother Mark... Mark from the Mark Draft. You guys remember from the Mark? They hate everybody, and I talk to them about sports all the time, and they're never impressed with anybody.
I'm just a show me type cat, and it's got to be consistent. Show me. You know what I'm saying? Because, and then you have to be able to take it to that next level. Because I've seen 1,000 great college players who are flashing the pans in the NFL. So you know what I'm saying? Like what Fournette is doing right now is great, but like I was saying about last week. In the South Carolina game, he ended up with like 156 yards on like 20 carries, but he had 80 yards on one carry, untouched. So now, if you take that 80 yards and that one carry away, it ends up like 19 carries for 70 some yards. That's not outstanding. He's not running through the competition. So you have to look at it on that scale basis. Everybody looking at, oh, another 150-yard game.
Now, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but he does break like a 50-yard touchdown.
He does. I give him that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I give him that. I give him credit. Like I said, I'm not denying the credit, but they act like he's the greatest running back to ever step in football. Talk about shit that they changed the NFL rules.
Yeah, no,
like,
that's ridiculous.
You're overdoing it.
And we have Master Ace. Master Ace.
Doing something.
Right, and Master Ace is kind of saying the same thing. You know, he made some points about that. Shout out to, again, Master Ace for the podcast last week. That was a unbelievable podcast. If y'all haven't heard that, check it out, hiphopsportsreport.com. And shout out Master Ace once again, and go pick up his project.
You know what I'm saying? Before I start getting on bandwagons, I want to see something that's never been done in college football. He's not doing something
never been done.
As a running back, when you want to put him on God level, he should be doing something that never has been done by a running back in college football. Is that true? Before you start, we should change these rules.
I mean, they're comparing to Herschel Walker.
We should change these rules.
Look
at Herschel Walker and Bo Jackson's college stats, and then that would be the absurd statement to you. You know what I'm saying? It would be absurd because I grew up in that area. It would be absurd for you to rank this guy on a pretty good freshman running back season and a great five games. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would be absurd for you to do that. It would be like saying somebody is Michael Jordan after their rookie year. Like, Jordan
Wiggins. See,
Andrew Wiggins. Like, saying Andrew Wiggins, like, oh, he's a Canadian Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? So,
like Tony Kukoc, is a Croatian Michael
Jordan. Yeah, so it's just, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not him. I don't have no problem. I think he's doing a great job. He's doing what he's supposed to do. Teams are game planning for him. He's still getting 150 yards, 120 yards. But that's where the media comes into play and making out to be something overly ridiculous.
Here's where I disagree with that. I feel as though there are basketball examples, and it's primarily in basketball that you see this. If they see somebody's, and I put my air quotes up for y'all on the podcast, potential, and they crown people strictly off potential. Harold Miner, strictly off potential.
And the dunk contest.
Like, these cats are injured players, have never played an NBA game against actual that level of talent, and they compare them to the greatest of all time. Like, that's absurd.
True indeed.
But there are examples, like LeBron James, where he is so head and shoulders above his competition. You can't help but say this dude is unparalleled level great. Like, and so I don't need to see LeBron James play for 20 years to know his athleticism and talent level compared to everybody else around him, no matter what stage. It's just that fast, that big, that skill level. And so when you're students of the game, like I like to act like some of the media has credibility. Not all of them. Some of them are hype artists. But some of the media, they have credibility. They're students of the game like you and I. But more so than myself. They know. They see certain things. They see these intangibles. And they're able to draw comparison. They don't just say, oh, he's Jim Brown. They draw direct parallel. Oh, he's like Herschel. He's like this. And when you see a guy running the ball and instinctively change the ball in hand and bench press a guy and make cuts like... That's something that you don't just come along with every day. That's not a Reggie Bush flash in the pan that's quick, fast, get five touchdowns, and, oh, he's going to change the NFL game. Now, they did that with Reggie Bush.
Reggie Bush is an amazing talent.
He's an amazing talent, but when he was amazing college. Exactly. So he broke records. He did stuff like that. But I knew when he got to the next level, he was going to be, you know, he was going to have an impact, but he was never going to be elite. You know, this guy, Fournette, I really feel like when he gets to the league, it's gonna be his.
Let me say this: I'm not positive that Leonard Fournette is better than Ezekiel Elliott. How about that?
I am. So right now we're in here doing the podcast. I'm sure the game is still going on. Before the game started, we kind of gauged how many yards this cat was going to get.
Fournette, we're talking about. Fournette. And I threw out the number of 150. I said over, under.
And I say 166.
I said
under. You said under.
Vince said under 150. I can look it up, see what he's doing right now. But, I mean.
And so we can continue to talk while he's doing that, because the next running back on the
thing to talk about was the boy from the Steelers, yeah. Le'Veon Bell. And I don't think he's overrated. I just think he plays a different type. Like, I don't think he's somebody that you compare to Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson is a different... He don't catch the ball at the back door. If you're going to compare Le'Veon Bell to somebody, compare him to LT. Compare him to Marshall. Because he's a receiving, all-down, all-purpose back. Adrian Peterson is a running back. He's going to run you over. And matter of fact, Adrian Peterson to me is like Fournette. Adrian Peterson will get someone's 2019 carries for 60-some yards and breaking one. And his overall yards total for the game will be 120-something because of that one that he broke off. And that's why you pay him, because he will be able to break that.
Well, I was the one that made the statement that Le'Veon Bell was overrated. And it's all the eye test, and it's all subjective. I'm going to get to this in a second. Okay. I'm looking at the phone right now. Terry trying to sneak a peek. I'm hold on. You know, sneak a peek on the stats, because I see the stats at halftime. I'm going to tell you the stats right now. But I just believe, and some of you may be looking at me with a side eye as we speak, because I'm a Browns fan, and so I'm predisposed to hate everything Pittsburgh Steelers, you know. But Le'Veon Bell, who is also from Ohio, I believe. I'm think he's from the Columbus area, I think, and went to Michigan State. But anyway, Le'Veon, when I watch him play, I'm just not overly impressed with what he does with the football in his hands. I think he's got a nice lateral step. You know, he's not incredibly strong or incredibly fast. He doesn't hit the hole incredibly hard. He doesn't have an exceptional vision from what I see. I think he's a very productive player. I think he's a very good running back. I think he's one of the better running backs in the league. I'll give you that. And I think he is a complete running back. As you were saying, Terry, his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. He can catch eight passes for 100 yards. You know what I'm saying? He can do that. But I think there's other running backs that can do that too. Jamaal Charles can do that too. And I think he can do it better than Le'Veon Bell can. And I think, you know, obviously prior to injury. And I think there's running backs like Adrian Peterson who are better with the ball in their hands than Le'Veon Bell is. What I don't like is how media people, especially during and immediately after the Monday Night Football game, is how people are just immediately crowning Le'Veon Bell as the best running back in the NFL simply because he was the number one fantasy football running back coming into the season. You know what I'm saying? He was the number one fantasy running back at the end of last year, and then Peterson obviously wasn't in the picture. Then this fantasy season started. Despite the two-game suspension, people were still picking Le'Veon Bell at the top of the draft. And because he was the most sought-after fantasy talent, people are equating that to him being the best running back in the NFL. And I just think that's untrue.
He did have immediate impact as soon as he got out on the field off of suspension.
He is.
Statistically, he had
immediate impact. I'm saying. He's productive. I'm not questioning his productivity.
He helps the football.
But to the media's defense, they crown everybody. They crown Jamaal Charles the best. They crown AJP. It depends on what game they're talking after. If you watch after the AP game, he's the best. If you watch after the Jamaal Charles, he's the best. Like, they crown people.
Do you believe Le'Veon Bell's better than Marshawn Lynch?
I think they're different backs. Marshawn Lynch is the hardest tackle in the league.
Even harder than Adrian Peterson?
You heard what I said.
Even harder than Todd Gurley?
I think Marshawn Lynch is the hardest. You will not tackle Marshawn Lynch one-on-one 9 times out of 10. It's not going to happen. I think they're different. I think if you try to tackle AP, you're going to feel it. He's going to deliver a blow. But I've seen AP take some not-so-difficult tackles. Like, he's gone down with not a lot of, you know what I'm saying? It's just different.
It's worth pointing out that Adrian Peterson may be past his prime. He's 30 years old. He might be past his prime.
I don't think he's past his prime. I think he's going to destroy. I think he probably will lead the league in rushing yards. I think he's probably going to end the season leading the league in rushing yards, but it's also because they don't do a whole lot of running back by committee in Minneapolis, so that has a lot to do with it.
I mean, all the backs are different kinds of backs. So, like, even...
Gurley is a beast, by the way.
Yeah, Gurley is a beast. But even you know what I'm saying, the Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson comparison is different. Because Marshawn Lynch, in the hole, when he sees somebody in the hole, whether it's a linebacker or a defensive back, he's going to try to run them over. Adrian Peterson's going to try to run around you first. And if he can't, he's going to run you over. You know what I'm saying? That's the type of back
Marshawn
Lynch is looking for contact because he can't. He's not fast enough to beat you down.
He's hungry. He's
deceptively fast, but he's not Adrian Peterson fast.
No.
Like, you get Adrian Peterson on the corner, it's nothing you can do with him. You can drive a cart behind him, you're not going to catch him. You know what I'm saying? Marshawn Lynch, you might be able to catch him, but when you get there, you might not like what you get to. Right. You know what I'm saying? So you got it's a whole different kind of back. You know what I'm saying? So you got different kind of backs, and I kind of would agree with both of you on the Le'Veon Bell. Because I think Le'Veon Bell is the same back he was in college. I was never really a big fan of Le'Veon Bell. I just would say, but that's what he does. Consistency. Consistency. Yeah. He's on a team where he can do what he does. That's another thing. That's a whole team other argument.
Lot to do with.
It's a whole other argument because if you take Le'Veon Bell,
put him in Cleveland.
You don't have to put him in Minneapolis. Take before Teddy Bridgewater, pop Adrian Peterson out, put Le'Veon Bell in.
He's not doing it.
Because he can't do what Adrian Peterson does. Adrian Peterson does a lot of his
stuff. He creates his own stuff.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a whole different thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of a different kind of argument. But he fits, like, they want to crown and do all that. But as far as right now, you know what I'm saying? We were talking about it earlier. If you want to crown who fits the system and do it well, look at Devontae Freeman in Atlanta.
You know, it's funny. I was watching the highlights of the Saints-Falcons game either last night or this morning. And Devontae Freeman, he was running through a lot of big holes.
A lot.
I was surprised. I was like, I didn't know Atlanta could block like that.
They improved.
I don't think they can.
They improved.
I don't think they can. I think
at least against in that one game. I'm not saying I can't speak to all of Devontae Freeman's game. But in that game, he has huge holes.
But this is the point I was making earlier. When you have the offensive threats that you do, like pass blocking and run blocking are different. Pass rushing and regular rushing are totally different. If you pass rushing and you defend and run, it's totally different. So if you got these amazing weapons on the outside and you don't know whether you're trying to get to the quarterback or whether you're trying to stop the run as a lineman, it's going to look like you got some wide open holes and their line is blocking well because the stunts that they do, and they make this, they do these amazing stunts that make it look like it's a pass, and next thing you know, the defenders are out of position.
They were doing some zone blocking in that game against New Orleans, like stretch plays and stuff like that.
And so
I didn't know Atlanta was running like that.
It's just when you change it up like that, and you don't know whether you got to defend Julio Jones or Freeman. It's hard. It's really hard.
And maybe that's part of the reason why Le'Veon Bell's been so productive.
And I said that.
Antonio Brown on the outside, who again I think Antonio Brown is the best receiver in football right now.
He's the toughest cover.
He's the toughest. I mean,
I think Jones is the best receiver. I think Antonio Brown is the hardest cover because he's just so fast. He's so fast. And he's so quick.
Right. The reason why I would take Antonio Brown is route running is crisper and everywhere he catches the ball everywhere on the field. Like Julio Jones,
I never seen Julio on the slot.
Like deep.
Well, I'll take it back. They're starting to do it this year.
He just took the ball out of two people's hands 2 weeks ago.
Deep middle with Julio Jones or them, you know what I'm saying, wide receiver screen plays. But like all these little slant moves and inside in the linebackers. Right. Julio Jones don't do that. Antonio Brown does a lot of that. And I hate to say it because I'm from Cleveland too, and I'm a bro. But he does so much. You know what I'm saying? You can
returns punts, so you can see what he's like with the ball.
Thing about it is he creates so many mismatches because he can play in that slot, or you can send him from wide into the middle with them linebackers. And so once he catches the ball,
it's gone.
Who's going to tackle him in there? You know what I'm saying? Like Julio Jones is fast and quick, and bit a big body. He's a bigger target to hit. This dude is shifty, quick moves. So
let me interrupt real quick.
Go ahead.
First half, Leonard Fournette, 15 carries, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Beast.
28-14.
What's his long?
I don't know if I have that on the phone. I may not have.
And I said 166. He got 100 at the half. I'm telling you, I knew he'd go over 150. And like you said, they plug in the box. They saying, I dare you beat me on the pass. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to try. And they put the men in the box. And he's still. This is the number what?
His
rank
long, long was 25 yards.
And what's their rank? What's the rank of the team they playing?
Oh, Florida's number 8. But they ain't got their quarterback. Their quarterback got suspended for PEDs.
I'm not talking about the quarterback.
He's about the defense.
I'm talking about you rank number 8. Your defense is sound.
Not necessarily. Yeah. I mean,
he scored 28-14?
Yeah, well, okay. Well, I'm saying, I mean, they don't play defense in the SEC.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I want to see him do good. And had them big games against like an Alabama, a team that is known for defense in that, you know what I'm saying, conference. Because last year, his Alabama game was.
Well, they will play them.
They will play them.
And he will get 152 yards.
against Bama.
Like, I said, we'll see.
He'll get 152 yards.
Like I said, we'll see. But, like, my thing is, like we said on the media thing, people want to crown him. Like, he's not doing anything I haven't seen a college running back do.
I've never seen a college running back bench press a defender with one arm. I've never seen it. I've never seen a person get bench pressed mid-run. I've never seen it.
Bo Jackson could have done it.
Maybe I'm not saying he couldn't have. He said he'd never seen it. I've never seen somebody run away.
But that's a highlight. That's a Sports Center take. I watch sports. I don't watch Sports Center. You know what I'm saying? I want to see him do something with the football. He's a running back. Who cares who he bench presses? I want to see him do something phenomenal with the football, like you seen Eric Dickerson do at SMU, or you seen Bo Jackson do at Auburn, or Barry do at Oklahoma State. I don't see that. So when they start crowning him and saying he's the next best thing since sliced bread, I can't agree.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me push it forward to the NFL again.
Let's go.
First quarter impressions. We're about every team has played four games. I don't think every team has played five games just yet. Maybe
because the Patriots.
The Patriots are 4-0. So yeah. So every team has played four games out of 16. So we're a quarter of the way through the season. What are you guys' impressions so far? What you've been seeing?
I think the Patriots are heads and shoulders above every other team in the NFL.
It's so cliche to say that the Patriots are on a mission. Everybody's on a mission. I hate that phrase. But are they on a mission? Brady doesn't apply this time.
Brady's on a mission, and it's scary to watch. Like
they comparing it to 07.
When they did that chart of how many times he was in the red zone and his team scored points, they put points on the board. How many times he had the ball in his hands, they put points on the board. Like, it's scary. Like, and then every other team, like, you don't know who's going to win. Every other game, even the teams that's undefeated, Cincinnati, Denver, like, they could have lost those games. They were in a position to lose them games. The Patriots were not in a position to lose these games,
well,
man.
Let me play devil's advocate. Now, I don't disagree with what you're saying. You're not wrong. Terry said that's my go-to line of debates. You're not wrong. New England, they beat Pittsburgh. Defense suspect. And they didn't have Le'Veon Bell. Defense suspect, Pittsburgh, whatever. Week two, I think New England played. I know they beat Jacksonville, I think, in week three, and they stink.
They played the Jets, then.
No, they played the Buffalo.
They played the Bills.
I'm kidding. The Bills. Ryan just, right. Wherever you at,
okay.
You know.
Right. But, okay. But Buffalo, you know.
Put up a lot of score.
You know, Buffalo's decent. They're not.
I love Tyrod Taylor, by the way. But yeah,
well, defensively they're still solid. Offensively they're still
suspect. And now, granted, they didn't have Shady McCoy either. I don't think that day. But you know, Buffalo. I mean, at best, they're like a 9-7 sneak in the playoffs, get bounced in the first round kind of team. At best, then they beat Jacksonville 50-2 or something like that, and then they beat Dallas without everybody. So couldn't you look at the Patriots' resume to this point and say, you know what, and their schedule going forward is not all that difficult. They got Andrew Luck and the garbage Colts, you know, on Sunday, and I cannot wait until the Patriots annihilate the Colts tomorrow.
Okay, so here's
I am hoping that the Patriots score 200 points on the Colts tomorrow.
Here's my views on all of that.
And again, I'm playing devil's advocate because I picked the Patriots going to the Super Bowl.
This is not college football. Everybody on the 53-man roster are professional paid athletes. They are paid to be almost as good as the person who's starting above them. And any given week in the preseason, there was a struggle for who was going to start for those positions. And a lot of the plays that are made by somebody who's filling in for somebody who's injured. The interceptions, the sacks. This is somebody who's
talking about New England.
I'm talking about in the NFL. Oh, man, this interception made by somebody. He had just got in the game. I'm just saying, like, these plays are not. Every play is not made by a superstar.
Remind me to say something about defensive backs. I got a comment.
Every play is not made by a superstar. It's not a prerequisite that only starters and superstars can. All these people that make names for themselves now, they got their position because the starter got injured, got hurt, got old, whatever, and they stepped up and performed well. They said, hey, why don't you stay back? We're going to keep this guy in the game. I mean, all these guys, that's how they got their shot. So I don't like that taking away credit from a professional football team when they beat another group of professionals because it just wasn't the starters. I don't buy that.
I agree with that. Like, my point on the take is we can future take as they didn't play anybody, and that's not even my take. I'm just saying that's the devil advocate take.
Right, right, right.
But that could be a valid point, but this is not the Falcons. Like, oh, last year they went 4-12.
We know this is the Patriots' way.
This is what they do every year.
They mow down
everybody. This is what they do every year. It don't matter who they play, strength of schedule, what they do.
They mow them down.
They're in the playoffs. They're in the championship game. They're in the Super Bowl. That's what they do. They just hoisted this trophy, and they got rings this year. So,
and they got injuries.
We know this is what they do. So right.
Where's LaVell?
So you can't say that.
He ain't back yet. You can't say that for them dudes.
You know what I'm saying?
They sold us out for the season. Terrell Brown is
right.
out.
So everybody got injuries. You can't say that for the Patriots.
Yeah. The Patriots, to me, is the Patriots being the Patriots. It's normal being normal.
And Brady's angry, but keep going.
Brady's been playing angry for his whole career. And that's why I love him.
He's been playing angry his whole career.
He's pissed off his entire career.
Spurgeon Wynn got picked before Tom Brady.
By the Browns.
Spurgeon Wynn. You know what I'm saying?
Tell me everything you know about Spurgeon Wynn. There's a guy named Spurgeon Wynn?
Thank you. You know what I'm saying? So, you know what I'm saying? He's been playing angry his whole career. Everybody was like, he wants to get back at the thing and the NFL for this and that. That's just how he plays.
Yeah, I don't think he needs to. He plays with a chip on his shoulder.
He plays angry. He plays passionate. Have you ever watched Tom Brady in the preseason game when he threw a touchdown? He yelling at the offensive line and yelling at the fans. That's just him. That's why Belichick doesn't take his players out when they have a big lead
because this is how we play. If you want us to stop scoring on you, stop us.
Yeah.
You want us to not get a first down or fourth down, stop us. If anything, I'll give you an advantage. Instead of not punting you the ball, I'm going for it. You can get the ball right here. Stop us.
What's funny is that there was discussions last week about Aaron Rodgers being considered the Michael Jordan of football. I think one of his teammates invoked the name Michael Jordan when discussing Aaron Rodgers on the football field. And I steadfastly believe that Tom Brady is the Michael Jordan of football. And the competitiveness and everything else, you know, emphasizes that point. Tom Brady's the Michael Jordan of football. Aaron Rodgers is more like LeBron. He's the younger guy, not young, but younger guy that, you know, doesn't have all the career accomplishments that Brady, or in this case, Jordan has, that kind of thing, but he's still trying to play catch up. But funny thing about Aaron Rodgers is that he appears to be a completely different quarterback away from Lambeau Field. And now, I'm not saying that he's bad on the road, but he's so exceptional at home. That when he plays on the road, and you know, like every game he plays at Lambeau, his QB rating is like 120.5, like after every game, or 128, some kind of ridiculous number. And then he goes away from Lambeau, and his QB rating is like 98 or 90. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, oh, like the San Francisco game 2 weeks ago, like they couldn't put up more than 20 points on the 49ers. Is there anything to this? Like, I mean, like, I don't have the splits in front of me. I could pull up the stats, his home road splits, but something with Aaron Rodgers on the road, man, it's not, he don't look like Aaron Rodgers, you know?
The crazy thing about that is, I would say that for every quarterback in the NFL except Tom Brady, every single one.
And even Brady's better at home.
Yeah, but I'm just saying,
but the drop off
the
is
drop
so
drastic, and it's all it has, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, if you see, Peyton Manning's record at home when he was in Indianapolis, then he go on the road, whatever, and playing outside weather and playing a different crowd. Like, it just changed. You know what I'm saying? Like,
what is that?
I don't know. To me, the Michael Jordan of football.
I think that's absurd, by the way.
But to me, the reason why.
Brady's the Jordan?
I think it's absurd that any of these quarterbacks that are in mention are compared to a multi-tier level talent like Michael Jordan. Like, Michael Jordan perfected and excelled in various aspects of the game. Like, he was just a three-point shooter. And that was his job, was to be a three-point shooter. He was the best ever at three-point shooting. You can say, oh, he's the Michael Jordan. Like, they throw the ball. They don't run touchdowns.
They're leaders. They're responsible for clock management. You know what I'm saying? They command the huddle.
But they don't run a lot of different the things. Ball. If you're going to compare them, they don't. The two names you named don't. If you're going to compare a NFL player to the greatest basketball, arguably, the greatest basketball player of all time, he better be the greatest football player of all time.
I think you can easily make the case that Tom Brady is the greatest football player of all time. I'm not saying he is. I'm saying you can easily, because look at, let me just boil it down to this. The look of astonishment on your face is frightening me right now. But let me just say this, okay? Most people would agree that quarterback is the most difficult position to master in football and possibly in all sports. And that it has, of any one individual position on the football team, has the most influence over wins and losses. Most people would agree with that. So if it has that much of an impact on a game to game, more than any other position, and then if we take Tom Brady and look at his career resume, both based on team accomplishments and individual accomplishments, and then deduce from that that he's the greatest quarterback of all time, it's not a great leap to say he's the greatest football player. I disagree.
But let me, I'm gonna argue a whole different scenario than the one you argue. You say, quarterback doesn't run the ball, but they don't do whatever. Okay? Michael Jordan, where does he rank in rebound? Where does he rank in assists? Where does he rank in blocks?
He's on there, though.
No, he's not.
Yes, he's
not. Not even rebounds for guards.
No.
When they do
I'm gonna tell you, this is how I know this.
Scoring.
No. This is how I know. When LeBron has those records and those stats are points and assists in a game.
Young Jordan used to put them up.
I'm talking about all time. Where does Michael Jordan? But that's what you're saying.
No, you said
Tom Brady doesn't run the ball. Well, Michael Jordan doesn't rebound.
So we can't say he's not great.
He averaged 5.5 rebounds a game.
That's a lot of rebounds for a guard.
Now you make qualifiers.
Exactly. What I'm saying is, he ain't getting one rebound. He ain't saying, look, I'm a one-trick pony. What I'm saying is this. His stats are, like, he's got a line of stats. Like, when LeBron James has games, his games are prolific. He's got 20-10-5, or 25-5, or 26-6, or 36-6. And then they say the last player to do this was Michael Jordan and Big O. And then when he has another game that does this, the last player to do this was Michael Jordan and somebody else. Like, Michael Jordan's name is always in those stats when it's multiple qualifiers. That's what I'm saying. Like,
but he, for a game. That's what I'm saying. You can't.
No, I'm talking about.
Look at Michael Jordan's career stats. His career stats don't. If you want career stats, I would say like an Oscar Robertson, who averaged 30 points and 10 rebounds and 8 assists for his career. I mean, 8 rebounds and 10 assists for his career. That's his career. Not one season, not one game. He averaged that triple double for his career.
But I'm just saying,
we're not talking about Michael Jordan's averages for his career is like 30.5 rebounds and 5 assists.
That's a great.
It's a great line, but you saying you just disqualified Tom Brady for being mentioned with Michael Jordan because he don't run the ball.
No, you can say
Michael Jordan don't rebound the ball because his guards that have better more rebounds.
I didn't say he don't run the ball like a running back. I didn't say he ain't the best running back in the. I'm saying he ain't one of the. He ain't. If you run a stat line for passing and rushes, like there's stats for people who pass the ball and run. You ain't got to be the best runner. That's my point. If you're going to say somebody's the best football player.
So you then, can't never do it then. Because Jim Brown never passed the ball. Barry Sanders never passed the ball.
But LT did.
I mean, but he got like five passes.
Like, is he the greatest football player? Because he got 300 yards passing and Tom Brady got 60,000.
What I'm saying is.
Tom Brady's also probably the best short yardage running quarterback of all time. Or at least in recent memory.
The reason they made that comment about Rodgers is because of that.
Because he runs the ball.
I
disagree.
The
reason why I think they say Rodgers, because the reason why I would compare Aaron Rodgers to Michael Jordan, and I'm not the greatest Michael Jordan fan, but I compare Aaron Rodgers to Michael Jordan because Aaron Rodgers has done stuff at the quarterback position that I have never seen a quarterback. He's made throws that Tom Brady can't make, Peyton Manning can't make, Joe Montana can't make, anybody you go back in history. And Michael Jordan used to do that on the basketball court. He used to make plays on the court that nobody could ever do and probably nobody will ever do. That's the reason why I would compare Aaron Rodgers to Michael Jordan. But not just eyeball to eyeball. The running all the way to the right of the field and throwing something on the rope. 40 yards back across the field on one leg, and it hits the dude perfectly in stride, like without throwing air up under it. Like, that was great play. That's why, like, he does stuff like that when Michael Jordan switches the ball in the air. Nobody ever do that. That's a Michael Jordan pattern. You could try it, You can do whatever. It's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Because that's where I get to draw the parallel. Not just to run the ball. You know what I'm saying? I just...
If you're going to be a great football player, man. You ever see... within the last 3 years. Maybe it was 2 years ago. For the first time in his entire career, your boy did a bootleg. Peyton.
Peyton Manning, he was untouched.
It was the slowest.
He was untouched. It was against Dallas.
It was sad to watch.
It was like Flacco last week against the Browns.
Yeah, exactly. It was sad. It was scary to watch. Nobody would ever say he's the best. Now, there's a lot of people that say he's one of the greatest quarterbacks. A lot of people over the years. And then the people that take it away from him because he didn't win the Super Bowls or he didn't win the big game or whatever. But the point is, they still qualified him as one of the greatest quarterbacks. And that was the debate. Him or Brady. For years, him or Brady. But nobody said he was the best football player, even though he was in contention for the greatest quarterback. So my point is, you can be in the discussion for the greatest quarterback all day, but until you have other elements, and he made throws that nobody made. He had command of the field. His offensive coordinator was the closest fan there was, because he just brought up a chair. He didn't have a job. You know what I'm saying? He dissected defenses. He can make throws. His QB vision was phenomenal. So all those things you're talking about that a quarterback does, he did them. But that was it. You don't have to worry about him running. You don't have to worry about him scrambling. You don't have to worry about him doing you in any other way. Aaron Rodgers, you cannot open that pocket up because he will start you.
So who's the greatest football player? I mean.
Who's the Michael Jordan of football if you had to pick one?
If I had to pick one.
You can't do it. From your criteria, you're absolutely correct. It's two different sports.
You can't do it. You're right.
So you can't. You know what I'm saying? You can't do it.
You're right.
So you can't say Michael Jordan is the Tom Brady of basketball either.
I wouldn't.
You know what I'm saying? So it's uncomparative. That's what the whole statement should have been. Right. You can't compare the two sports.
Right. Well, there you go. Because the first thing you said was it's absurd to say
that. That's Brady exactly.
Is that right? Is the Jordan of football?
That's right.
But you're saying that anybody can.
Yes, exactly. There are players like Denard Robinson. If he was a prolific quarterback, and
they had that, they called him Michael Vick.
Yeah,
but he ain't a prolific quarterback. He's got a great arm.
I mean,
but that's a whole other conversation. We don't need to go down that path. Right.
We only got like 2 more minutes,
right? But. So that's the first name that came to my mind, but I quickly disqualified it from even coming by my left. But it would be somebody like Michael Vick or Warren Moon. That's who I would think. Or if I was to pick anybody, it would be somebody like Marshall Faulk. It would be a multi-level parallel player. But I couldn't say that because, like you said, he don't throw the ball. It's one element. And because of that, I wouldn't even draw the parallel.
It's just different sports. But to me, it's just like the media. It's a one thing. You can't compare the sports. You can't compare. You can't say nobody in...
They do that mess in golf, too.
You can't say nobody in... basketball is like football because they don't get hit every time they touch the football. You know what I'm saying? They don't get beat up. You know what I'm saying? So careers will be shorter. Things will get different. So you just can't compare the two. The statement is, you know what I'm saying? It's not a statement to be analyzed.
But you know,
because if you analyze it, it's not as ironic.
ESPN did it two, 3 years ago when they start comparing all the greatest of all the sports.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't Jim Brown win that? Didn't Jim Brown get the best athlete of all time? They was like comparing all the.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, they did a Sports Century. They made Michael Jordan number one. That was up to 2000, up to 1990.
No, I'm talking about they had like every week they were doing this bracket. Like they made
that was
brackets.
Like 6 or 7 years ago.
Was it that long ago?
I think Tiger Woods won that at the time.
They just did it again.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Jim Brown or something.
But you know what I'm saying? The whole thing about it is you can't compare sports. And like to me, and the same way goes to boxing, you can't compare eras.
You know what I'm saying?
Because like. I'm from Cleveland, you know what I'm saying? We got our problems with certain people, you know what I'm saying? I'm not a big Michael Jordan fan, we talk about that, but, like, my father grew up in the 60s, 50s era, and he's naming 4 or 5 people that he thought was better than Michael Jordan. So, you can't compare eras. Everybody's going to have their era. Everybody's going to have their sport. You just need to let people live in their moment and stop comparing them and let them be great in the space that they're in. That's what sports is about.
I'm down. Absolutely. We're going to leave it there, y'all. I know y'all enjoyed that conversation, man. I know I did, and I didn't do most of the talking, but I love that discussion. Thank you, Terry, for joining us. Thank you, Vince.
Appreciate
it. Yep, got you guys back on again in no time. Preseason podcast of the year. Signing off. Go ahead, check out the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. The NBA preview is in movement right now as we speak. You'll see the rest of it in the coming days. Again, please download the podcast on iTunes and hit us up on Stitcher Radio as well. Please subscribe to the podcast, leave commentary, feedback, whatever. We accept it, and we love to hear from you guys. And then also check us out on Twitter and Facebook at HHS Report. And that's pretty much going to do it, man. We're about to get out of here and watch some Ohio State, y'all. Later. Peace. Rest in peace, Tone. Love you. Nobody diss my nigga. Damn, I miss my nigga. A bottle of liquor.